Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Now with McDonald's, wake up to a $4 breakfast meal deal. Wake up to a sausage McMuffin or sausage biscuit to hash browns and wake up to a hot coffee. Get your $4 breakfast meal deal.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad taking you through this Thursday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee, live from the Wholesale Inc. studio powered by RomeLawn.com. And I've got some tickets to give away, people. Volbeat coming to Municipal Auditorium on Monday, April 13th. I've got a pair of tickets to see them at the Municipal Auditorium. Volbeat, the show is presented by our sister station, 102.9 The Buzz. Be caller 5 at, and if I could get the number that we now use, that's a good point.
I like the hustle, too. Seeing how fast you can do it.
I don't know where the number is. Marquise, we have a new phone number.
Come on, Marquise. All right, he's getting
the
there.
The phone number is 615-747-6220.
Yes.
615-747-6220. Be caller 5.
Now, we have our engineering department has done a very good job the last couple of days. We had some phone damage to the storms, and they've come in and really helped us. But we have a new phone number for the time being. So that's the number you call, be caller 5, to win tickets to Volbeat at Municipal Auditorium. Which, if you've never been to an event at Municipal Auditorium, it's awesome. I love that place.
I was there for the
OVC tournament a few years ago. It's awesome.
I wish the OVC tournament was still there. I'm looking at going to Evansville this weekend. I would much rather be covering games there.
Absolutely. No question about it. This segment, which is normally Joe Rexroad on Thursday, is brought to you by Holly Gerrans and your local Geico agent on Rosa Parks Boulevard. Holly can help you out with your car, home, motorcycle, boat, and RV insurance located at 2120 Rosa Parks Boulevard. Think local, buy local with Geico. Joe, there is a bit of a disaster, and by bit of disaster, I mean a pretty big disaster, going on in New York with the New York Knicks. And look, we've known this for a long time. James Dolan is the owner of the New York Knicks. There's always drama there. There's always scandal there. There's a big story going on right now in New York. He and Spike Lee are not seeing eye to eye. Spike Lee has said, of course, a longtime Knicks fan who's been at pretty much every game for like the last 30 years. He said he's not coming back for the rest of this year. They're getting into it about all sorts of different things. Charles Oakley, who got kicked out of the building by James Dolan a few years ago, has weighed in on it and went on Golic and Wingo yesterday and said it's a plantation over there. It's bad, talking about James Dolan and his ownership of the Knicks. Charles Oakley wants James Dolan to be kicked out of the league and cited the NBA forcing Donald Sterling out of the Clippers ownership for making racist comments. I mean, it's just a bit of a disaster going on in New York. And I think we as sports fans in Nashville should be very thankful that the ownership groups, both with the Titans, with the Predators, and with Nashville SC, seem to be, number one, very good people, but number two, no drama whatsoever. And that's probably other than the stadium situation with Nashville SC, but that's basically out of the ownership control at that point. So not very much craziness in our town, which I think we should be very thankful about.
No, that's a good point.
That's not always the case.
It's not. I mean, first of all, Amy Adams Strunk, we talked about this earlier, but, you know, $1 million donation to help with, you know, recovery from the tornadoes. That's, you know, a tremendous, gesture on her part. And she's done a lot around here in the last few years to really, I think a few years ago, if you brought that up and we're talking about James Dolan, who's just a terrible owner, just awful. I mean, like, how would you get in a fight with, like, your most famous fan who's paid millions to sit in those seats and
who for some reason is still there? Like, can you imagine like, watching the New York Knicks play basketball every night?
I mean, to me, this is just like Spike Lee's excuse to finally get away from watching that crap. Like, I'm just done the rest of this year. I'll be back next year.
That's almost a form of torture. It really is.
Yeah. So, You know, so it's just idiotic, the whole thing, from the Dolan perspective. But no surprise given what he's been. But, you know, a few years ago, I think Titans fans or people around here might say, oh, Titans ownership, you know, they live in Houston. Yeah. And there was a lot of that. So Amy Adams Strunk has done a lot to fix that. Obviously, you know, the Preds don't have that visible person, but the ownership group, we know what happened there in terms of keeping this franchise here. So that's like eternal gratefulness there. And, gee, John Ingram's done a couple things for Nashville too, right?
A few times,
and
yes.
Obviously, a guy, I followed John Ingram around before the debut of Nashville SC as an MLS team Saturday. And, you know, he's just out there hanging out with people at a tailgate for hours, just having a blast, talking with people he knew, people he didn't know. People are shotgunning beers right next to him. He's having, that's cool. And Amy Adams Strunk has been at tailgates too. Like, to see someone like that out hanging out. Imagine James Dolan, you know, hanging out with the people before a Knicks game. I don't even know where that would be, but.
I don't think he wants to do that.
He wouldn't be riding the subway, but.
No.
I will say too, Robbie, the best part about this, see, you guys are too young to remember probably my favorite sports series that I wasn't affiliated with at all.
Maybe you're just too old.
There's a 30 for 30. That's true. There's a 30 for 30 on this, if you haven't seen it, on the Pacers-Knicks series of 94.
Oh,
man. So amazing.
Hey,
just
I was
amazing
two.
Stuff. You're okay. Okay.
I was alive.
You were alive. But Reggie Miller tweeted during this thing a news story about Spike Lee. He's like, oh, how the mighty have fallen. He said, this wouldn't happen at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. Maybe time to switch your allegiance, Spike, which is fantastic trolling by Reggie Miller, who, of course, you know, if you remember, he was the one, he had the double choke.
Oh, yeah.
On it, and that series was seriously some of the most fun I've ever had as a sports fan.
Absolutely. And I do think you mentioned A.B. Adams Strunk, and obviously a great gesture by the Titans yesterday and her specifically. Donating $1 million towards tornado disaster relief. It is amazing how quickly she's been able to come in and really change the perception of the Titans, I think. Because you're right. I mean, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, the ownership was a big problem here. And, you know, Bud Adams, you know, as much as he did for the city and the franchise, he was never really here. Like, he always lived in Houston. People had a problem with that. Then, of course, he passed away, and nobody from the family really, you know, stepped up and took control. Tommy Smith was here for a while and was kind of running things, but it was a disaster. I mean, that was right along the time Ken Wisenhunt was around, the end of the Mike Munchak era. Like, it was just a really bad franchise, and especially from a fan perception here in Nashville. I mean, going to a game wasn't fun. You couldn't hardly get into the building before, you know, the end of the first quarter. That's still been a problem at times.
Yeah, you still hear those complaints.
But it is amazing how Amy Adams Strunk has come in, and she's just done a great job. I think universally everybody would say that, you know, she's done a really great job. Number one, putting a competitive team together and helping that process go along. But number two, she is actively involved, which I think that's all people were asking for out of the Adams family. She's come in. She's taken that mantle. I think has done probably about as well or better than we could have hoped for.
Yeah, and I do think the number one thing is you hire football people who help give you a product that people want to watch, right? So all that stuff, like the post-Bud era of trying to find a face and a voice, also happens to be, and maybe it's not coincidental, but it happens to be when you're having terrible teams, like the sellout streak, all that stuff. There was some controversy. So there are a lot of things. But, yeah, I came here exactly almost 4 years ago, and that is what I was told by multiple people. Like, the Titans don't care about the fans. They are arrogant. It's this NFL thing. They live in Houston, and it's just a disaster, and it's just a bad franchise with bad ownership. That's what I was told.
Yeah,
and
it absolutely was.
And that was right around the exact time that Amy Adams Strunk became controlling owner, and I don't know if you could do any better than she's done in that time, other than, I guess, you know, you'd love to have like a 12-4 team versus a 9-7 team, but you've got three playoff wins now, and you've got a competitive team. She's invested in the facility too, the Titans facility, and that's a big thing too. You're trying to get free agents. You know, you want to make your own employees, your players happy. She's done that. She's bought a house in Green Hills, which may be more symbolic than anything. I mean, they're based in Houston, but but look, owners of sports teams at times are based in other places. That happens. But from in terms of being involved and, you know, just now, so she gives $1 million to this now. She understands what you're supposed to be as an owner, and she has a personality that people are drawn to. And that, how many owners can you say that about?
Not many.
Not James Dolan.
No.
But, I mean, I think even a lot. She has she goes out at training camp. If you go out there all during training camp with the Titans, I mean, she'll be out there just hanging out with people. And, yeah, signing autographs, whatever, taking pictures. But just, like, talking with people, she's, you know, it's there's that the billionaire, you know.
Stigma that goes like, along,
you know,
with that, yeah.
I want to go over here and have escargot. You know, I think, you know, that's not Amy Adams Strunk at all. And she's really resonated here.
She really has. I could speak for the entire city, I think. Very thankful that the ownership groups of our three professional sports teams are very likable people for the most part. Not always the case when you look around the sports landscape. I mean, think about the Cleveland Browns. Like, I guess the people-wise, they're fine, but, like, it's just a disaster over there.
Yeah, that's a Tennessee-related disaster, too.
Yes, it is. When we come back, we'll get back into a discussion we had earlier in the show. A big game tonight for the Predators against the Stars. And we've talked all year long about the Predators' top players underperforming, especially their forwards. Have we simply overrated the talent level of this group? Joe Rexroad and I will get into that next. You're listening to Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic taking you through this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Drake Hills from the Tennessean will join us at 8:30 to get into a little bit of Nashville SC talk, look ahead to their big game this weekend against Portland, and also look back at the festival that was their opening game against Atlanta United. But first, we're going to start talking about the Predators, their big game tonight against the Dallas Stars. And before we do that, Joe, I had a really cool thing happen on social media yesterday. David Witt, a Predators fan, reached out to me yesterday and offered up his tickets for the game tonight in efforts to try to auction those off for tornado relief here in our area. So the tickets that David offered up are in section 115, row LL. Right now the bidding is up to $150 for the pair of tickets, which you're talking about like nine rows off the ice. Really good seats, money going to a good cause. So if you're interested in bidding for those tickets for tonight's game between the Predators and Stars, tweet me at rstanleynhl. You can either tweet me or you can DM me. My DMs are open to everyone. So if you're interested in making a bid for the tickets tonight, that's how you can do it. Right now the bidding is up to $150. We'd like to see those numbers go up because the money is going to a very good cause, and awesome of David Witt to do that and offer up his tickets for a good cause tonight.
Yeah, fantastic job. David,
yeah,
and I'm gonna retweet this again because 150 is great, but it can be better than that. Great seats, huge game, great cause.
Absolutely. So if you're interested, tweet me at rstanleynhl. You can tweet me or DM me, and the bidding is going to be open until noon, just because I'd like to have whoever wins the tickets give them enough time to plan to go to the game tonight. So bidding will be open until noon if you're interested in those tickets. You know, Joe, we've been talking all morning long about the big game tonight the Preds have against the Stars, and we've been talking all year long about what a disappointing season it's been for some of their top forwards. And you asked the question to Adam Vingan yesterday that I thought was really interesting, and it got me thinking, like, have we simply just overrated the talent on this group? You're talking about Forsberg right now with 18 goals, Duchesne, 12 goals on the season, Ryan Johansson, 35 points in 65 games, all having down years at the same time. Is it possible that we got caught up in the 2017 run to the Cup Final, what happened a year later up until that second-round series against Winnipeg? Did we just simply overrate the talent on this group? Because my gut feeling and my gut answer to that still is no. But you do start to wonder when everybody's having down years at the same time. Okay, why is this happening?
Well, and if so, then it's going to be a rough road moving forward.
Yes,
here.
It is.
And I just, the thing is, I mean, there's a pretty good sample size for everyone. You go player by player. I think if there's a player who I thought one thing about him, and over time I think something different, it's Kyle Turris.
Yeah.
You know, I think about when he came, what that trade looked like for this team, and how it started for him. And it's kind of, and he has played better, certainly, under John Hines. But still, I mean, he has not produced close to what he had been producing. I don't care what anybody says. Philip Forsberg has elite talent. He's a 40-goal threat every year. And he's in a rough patch right now, and that's got to change. But we know what he is.
Well, I'm with you, but like, I'm always wanting more from him.
No,
like,
that's fair.
He's a guy that, you know, you see it. You see the talent. You think he's talented in a game, Joe. You know this. You should see some of the things that Philip Forsberg does at practice. I mean, it's just ridiculous, his skill level with the puck. But it seems like every year before the season starts, we're like, okay, is this the year that Philip Forsberg reaches 40 goals? And you look at his last few years, 17-18 had 26 goals, 18-19 had 28. Now, I get it. He missed some time in both of those years, 67 games in 17-18, 64 games in 18-19 last season, and he put up 28 goals. So you're talking about maybe creeping up towards that 35-goal mark last year if he's healthy the whole time. But I feel like as talented as Philip Forsberg is, as a good of a player he is, because there's no denying that, I still feel like there's another level that he can get to that for some reason he just hasn't yet. And that part is concerning to me. It's not like he's old. I mean, he's 25 years old. He's really just now entering the prime of his career. But I feel like there's more there in terms of production for Philip Forsberg.
Yes, I agree with that. But if you talk about overrating talent, I just wouldn't put him in that category. I think the guy who was overrated by some who maybe just didn't pay attention is Matt Duchene. Because I think when someone is so coveted and pursued and you just want your team so badly to get him, maybe you think he's more than he is. Matt Duchene is basically, he's a 60-point guy.
Yeah.
Really nice addition. Needed addition. I still fully believe that it was the right play to dump PK Subban's salary at that point in his career, and we've kind of seen that play out this year with him. I think it was the right time, and you had to try to get another big-time center, which I guess Kyle Turris was kind of supposed to be when you made that deal, but someone else who can give you a chance for two lines that could really be threats, especially in the postseason. That's the thinking, and I get the thinking. And Matt Duchene, I think, is one guy who he has not produced at his normal level. I think he's had enough of a sample size to think that he's, over time, going to be around there.
Yeah.
He should be.
Should be.
Johansson is the, to me, the one. Again, I don't doubt at all his talent. I don't see how
seen
you
it.
Could.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've seen enough of it to know. He's done enough. He's proved enough over years to know that. But with him, where is he right now? What's going on with him? That's, of all those guys, that's the question that I think always keeps coming up more than anything else.
I mean, 35 points in 65 games from your number one centerman, I mean, it's just unacceptable when you're getting paid $8 million per year. It's not like I'm saying anything groundbreaking there. I mean, he knows that, but how do you fix it? That's got to be the question as they move forward here. That's part of what's on John Hines as well. Got a text from Doug on the text line that says the strategy of Josi bringing the puck into the zone is outdated. We need to go back to a conventional offense and make our star forwards the stars again. I think John Hines is trying to get there.
Yeah, right.
I think that's a big part of what he wants his system to be. I do think that how active the defense has been, whether it's Josi primarily, but even Ellis, Ekholm, carrying the puck up the ice, leading the rush, maybe that has been a big part of why your forwards' numbers maybe haven't taken that jump to where we think they can be. But I do think John Hines has tried to fix that a little bit, which is why you've seen Granlund's numbers take off. I think that's why you've seen Kyle Turris play better, because they both play that way. And they both play better when they've got the puck leading the rush, going through the zone, rather than a defenseman. Now, Roman Josi is otherworldly talented at that. So
it's
okay to have him
with the puck.
You don't want to take that completely away from him. But I do think it's been a little bit less often that he's done that since John Hines has taken over.
Yeah.
I mean, something I've observed.
Yeah, it does seem. Granlund in particular is a guy who seems to have directly benefited from this change. So you could always say, you could always look at this and say, system, but also, you know, line combinations, all that stuff. How does that factor into individual production? But sometimes it's also just about go do more.
Yes.
And I think with Johansson, again, that's a guy who, you know, there's more there. You just know there is.
Got a text on the text line that says, 9 hasn't scored a goal, talking about Philip Forsberg, since January. That's not going to get it done. Duchesne had one in February. Look, I mean, you're not going to get any arguments from us there. I mean, that's unacceptable. That can't happen.
Yep.
And this team,
it's not sustainable.
It's going to be hard for them to get anywhere if those guys aren't leading the charge offensively. So that's kind of, you know, what we're trying to, I think all of us trying to figure out. And I would put, you know, John Hines and David Poile in this group as well. Is, we all understand the production hasn't been there. Why has it not been there? And how do you fix it? And those are two questions that, as we look at the way this season has gone, they've been pretty difficult to answer, I think.
And tonight is an opponent that will certainly make things tough on you. You're going to have to do extra. I mean, you're going to have to really work your butt off to get opportunities against these guys. So here you go. I mean, I think back, this team's been all over the place, but like, I think back to that Vegas game. That's still, of all the games this year, I look back at that one and say, man, they looked like they have no offensive threats on this team in that game.
They really did.
That should never happen. I don't care who you're playing.
Absolutely. When we come back, we're going to switch gears and get into a little Nashville SC talk. We'll look back at the big weekend that was in their game against Atlanta United, and also look ahead to their battle this weekend against Portland. Drake Hills from the Tennessean will join us. That's next on Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. And Joe, it was an exciting weekend last weekend in our city with Nashville SC beginning play. Their MLS season officially gets underway. We're efforting to get Drake Hills from the Tennessean on the line with us to talk about it, and also look ahead to this Sunday's matchup against the Portland Timbers on the road. But Joe, you were there on Saturday night to take in the scene, the atmosphere against Atlanta United. What were kind of your thoughts? I know I saw you before the game out in the tailgate area. As you mentioned earlier, you were following John Ingram around for a story you're doing. Just what was kind of the atmosphere like from your perspective on Saturday night?
Well, it was fantastic. I wasn't surprised at all. I will say, I think like a few weeks ago, were they around 30,000 tickets, maybe something like that? So it was like, oh, it's a little disappointing, you know? And then all of a sudden the momentum built and built and built, and you get to 59,000. That's a heck of a turnout. You know, you can kind of tell, it's like before a Titans game, before the game you look in the uppers and you see, are there people sitting, you know, like in those corners up there, high in the uppers? And if you see people in there, then you have an idea that it's going to fill out pretty well. And it was, 59,069, of course, largest crowd to watch a soccer match in the state's history.
Yep.
And it won't be that every time, but it was, I thought also just a really impressive showing for the back line. The back line is the south end zone, and it's a lot of various fan support groups. I mean, soccer is very unique. It's the support groups for soccer teams, and it's a European thing. You know, that it's really been embraced here. You know, the roadies are kind of the headliner, but there's a lot of groups. And the club has decided to consolidate them. And they made, you know, constant noise, constant ruckus. The Johnny Cash banner was just awesome.
Yeah, it was.
The scene was fantastic.
And to help us talk a little bit more about that, we have Drake Hills on the line with us from the Tennessee and covers Nashville SC. Drake, thanks for coming on with us, man. We appreciate it.
Yeah, it's nice to talk to you guys again.
Absolutely. So what was kind of your reaction from the atmosphere, the game itself, everything that took place at Nissan Stadium last week against Atlanta United? How did that go in terms of what you expected going into the game versus what actually happened both in the stands and on the field?
It was a highly anticipated crowd. It was a highly anticipated atmosphere in terms of, obviously, the amount of tickets was a big thing coming into the match. But one of the developing storylines, if you will, especially days before, was the amount of Atlanta United fans that were going to travel for this game. I went and talked with, just kind of inside conversation with, CEO of Nashville SC, Ian Ayer, or even MLS Commissioner Don Garber, and they were talking about, some folks were telling them individually, 10,000 Atlanta United fans are going to come. Up to 15,000 is what Don Garber told me. So it was interesting to not only have such a great presence from Nashville SC fans, but to have that good, friendly rivalry, if you will, or a real rivalry with Atlanta United in Nissan Stadium. And you would hope that if Atlanta United get on Nashville SC's schedule next year or sometime in the near future and it's in that Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, that the roles would be reversed and Nashville SC fans would make that trip down to Atlanta so that there would be a strong presence in both stadiums, and to have that southern soccer rivalry at any venue. So that was incredible to not only have, if when Walker Zimmerman scored, it went crazy, it went bonkers. And same thing would happen when Ezekiel Barco scored for Atlanta, pretty much on that south end of the stadium was a large group of Atlanta United fans, and they went crazy when Atlanta United got their first goal. So to have that headbutting, some sort of a rivalry was nice to see, and I think that'll be good for this sport, not only in Nashville but in the South.
Wouldn't it be nice, Drake, if they were on the same side of the league, so that rivalry could be cultivated a little bit more?
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens with Austin FC coming in down there in Texas. I'm sure many know who Matthew McConaughey is in terms of. Their celebrity, and having him as an owner would probably be pretty cool. I'm sure he'll bring in a lot of buzz down there in Austin. To put them in the Western Conference, I think they'll knock out Nashville and have Nashville be in the Eastern Conference. That's just what my hopes are because, of course, with you going to Vancouver, you're going to Atlanta, you're going to San Jose, that's pretty far. That's pretty far a trip. Especially when you play the game 3, 4, 5 days ago, and making that trip all the way out to Vancouver or even Seattle that's the last game of the season, a deadline day, October 4th. They got to go all the way out to Seattle, so those trips take a toll on you, I'm sure.
Drake, obviously, when you look at the game itself on Saturday, I talked to a bunch of friends of mine who are Nashville SC fans. They were really looking forward to going to the game Saturday, but they knew Atlanta United was a really, really good team, and they didn't really have high expectations in terms of the result of the game itself. From talking with them after, I think everybody was pleasantly surprised at how competitive Nashville SC looked in that game. What did you take away from their performance on the pitch, and what did you learn about Nashville SC's talent level now that you have a real-life game under their belt?
Well, in terms of talent, I wasn't shocked or surprised based on the fact that, if you take a look at the players on paper, there was too much experience, too much MLS experience with guys who have been in the MLS best 11. Now, we're talking, the 11 best players in the league at the end of the season. Someone like Walker Zimmerman, Dax McCarty has been mentioned throughout his previous 14 years in MLS, Daniel Lovitz. Got guys in different positions who have been at a high level in this league, and despite being on a team of players who haven't played with each other, it's too much experience and too much talent for there not to be a a promising product on the field at the very least. However, it did show, and they were exposed in that first goal when they, as I mentioned, Ezekiel Barco, when he got that first goal, when Eric Miller was marking him, and then he, you know, without much communication, kind of veered off and tried to cover the bearing, the wing player who was diving down into the box, and he left David Akama, and David Akama didn't know that he was supposed to pick this guy up. And so seconds later, Ezekiel Barco takes a strike without anybody within arm's length of him, so he didn't have much of a contest. Things like that, you understand, you can see that, you know, the chemistry and the communication and, you know, being on the same page is something that this Nashua SC team is still trying to get down and trying to, you know, make 100%. And that's going to hurt, obviously. If you don't have that goal, we're looking at a 1-1 draw at the moment, and someone's either going to take 1 point each or there's going to be some type of game winner at some point later in the match. So even after the game, Dax McCarty said, you know, it's unfortunate when Atlanta United have two shots on goal the entire game. And guess what happened? There were two goals for Atlanta United in the entire game. So having something like that happen in the first game or at any point in the season was pretty frustrating for them, I was told. And as a matter of fact, even on their end, having, you know, over four shots on goal, you know, that was something for them where, you know, they said that they, you know, especially Dax, was like, hey, I think, you know, later in the season as we get our bearings in and are able to build that chemistry and get much more sharp, Dominic Baggi said this as well, I think we're going to be able to convert those chances. I wasn't necessarily surprised at the, because of the talent, but I was interested to see if this is how they're going to play against Atlanta United. Now, I'm wondering across the entire schedule, you know, how well are they going to work with some against some of the other opponents?
Yeah, well, that's kind of what I was going to ask you, Drake. I mean, you've seen this team a lot, and so you already had a really good feel for the roster and how players are working together. But seeing this team in that game, and I think a lot of those guys also said, you know, the first few minutes, you got some nerves. Maybe they just weren't as focused, as sharp as they eventually got and really hung with what's supposed to be one of the best teams in the league. Do you have any different feeling just on the overall prospects for this team, you know, long-term this season?
Yeah, I think with this team, I'll just kind of maybe single out some of the players who I think could, you know, potentially, you know, step up and be a part of a good competitive team. I think I've said this before. I think their ceiling is trying to get their heads into the playoff, trying to butt in and kind of sneak into the playoffs in that seventh spot. I think that's the best. I think that's the ceiling right there. They have the players to do it, and I think some players who could potentially step up and to have some sort of role in that is, you know, we obviously saw someone like Alan Wynn, who I think was my biggest eye-opening surprise, got in as a substitute replacing David Akam, and, you know, obviously had a nutmeg, you know, got a dribble the ball right through, got a meg right through Jack Morani's legs, you know, something where, you know, as someone who's making his MLS debut, you know, that's pretty confident of you to make that move, and he almost created a chance out of that. You know, Nashville SC almost had a scoring chance from his creativity. Another guy I think is Derek Jones. He's been a part of the youth national teams before. You know, he didn't get into the game, but someone like Derek Jones, who's, if you take a look at the U.S. men's national team right now, someone like Josh Sargent or Tyler Adams or Weston McKinney, you know, he played with these guys in some of the younger teams, particularly the under-20 U.S. Men's World Cup in 2016, in the under-20 World Cup. I mean, he's at that level. Of course, he hasn't been able to develop at maybe a Tyler Adams or Weston McKinney pace, but you've got someone who with tremendous upside who has been in MLS before. He's played with the Philadelphia Union before. So there's going to be some players on that bench that could potentially be in a role where they're going to contribute, especially as the season goes on. And there's a 34 games in MLS plus U.S. Open Cup. I mean, this is, you know, injuries happen and form drops, form rises. So there's going to be some players with some opportunity.
Nashville SC beat writer Drake Hills from the Tennessean has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Drake, thanks so much for coming on with us, man. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Until next time, guys.
That's right.
Thanks, man.
Big game this weekend coming up for Nashville SC against the Portland Timbers on the road Sunday night. So looking forward to that one. I believe it's going to be on ESPN as well. So
that's a wild atmosphere.
Absolutely.
Out there.
Looking forward to that. When we come back, Joe Burrow has come out and said, don't be comparing me to Tom Brady now. I don't want any of that. We'll get into that next here on Morning Drive. But first, 102.5 The Game is your local donation station. We're accepting donations to help in the tornado disaster relief efforts. The Nashville Community Resource Center is in need of the following items: tarps, rolled plastic, hand sanitizer, laundry detergent, work gloves, and trash bags, just to name a few. Donations will be accepted Monday through Friday from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. at our studio located at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike. Again, that's 1824 Murfreesboro Pike here in Nashville. To see the full list of items, visit thegamenashville.com/donations. We'll be right back here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. ESPN 94.9 Game 2 is the official radio home of the Nashville Soccer Club. Listen in this Sunday as Nashville SC hit the road to take on the Portland Timbers. Pre-game begins at 5:45 with kickoff at 6 o'clock only on ESPN 94.9 Game 2. Welcome back into Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic, taking you through this Thursday morning here in our beautiful city in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, we're going to have Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports join us at 9 o'clock to kick off the 9 o'clock hour. Joe Burrow has come out and said that he doesn't want any of those Tom Brady comparisons. Please don't compare me to Tom Brady. And where this is coming from is you watch Joe Brady's throwing motion and just the mechanics that he has, how quickly he gets rid of the ball. And a lot of people, I think NFL Network draft analyst Daniel Jeremiah, compared Joe Burrow to Tom Brady, noting the similar mechanics. And Joe Burrow has basically come out and said, Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time. Just kind of let me do my own thing. Do you see any similarities in the way that Brady and Burrow deliver the ball? Or do you think this is just one of those things that comes around when the NFL draft and the combine gets going that people just like to talk about?
Man, we just have to talk about Tom Brady
about
from
Tom Brady
every possible angle. I don't know. I guess when I think about people having their mechanics compared, I think about, you know, unique mechanics.
Yeah, like Tom Brady.
I think they both throw the ball, kind of in a classic way to throw the ball. I don't think they're that comparable because Joe Burrow is a way better athlete than Tom Brady, which hasn't done anything to hurt Tom Brady's career. No. But Joe Burrow is a guy who is going to be able to run around and pick up chunks with his feet and extend plays and be one. I mean, look, anybody watch him at LSU, he'd had some ridiculous escape from the rush, run around, fling it downfield plays this year. That's not Tom Brady. Never has been, really. Tom Brady's an incredible quarterback sneaker.
The best of all time.
Yeah. So
you need half a yard, he's your man.
I mean, they're, you know, they throw the ball well. I don't know, man.
He says, please don't compare me to the best player of all time. Let me do my own thing. Don't do that to me, please, end quote. When told it was a compliment to be compared to the greatest of all time, the 23-year-old quarterback responded, it is, but it's Tom Brady. This is more what I want to talk about is how you don't think Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time.
Here's the thing. I think you can make the case for him, but I think that the six rings has everyone like, oh, clearly the GOAT, clearly the best ever. I'm like, well, okay, if it's just an accumulation of rings, I guess Dan Marino doesn't even get mentioned. I don't care what anybody says. I watched Dan Marino play his entire career. He's one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play football.
Well, so that
Dan
means
Dan Marino has no rings.
That also means Bill Russell is one of the best basketball players of all time. And then it also means that Robert Horry is top five in the league because he has multiple rings.
Well, he's got seven, doesn't he?
Good point on Horry. Now, of course, I mean, it's funny you said Bill Russell. My grandpa, my entire youth, And he wasn't like a Celtics fan. He said, don't believe what anybody tells you. Bill Russell is the greatest basketball player of all time. And his point there was half of the game is defense, probably the greatest defensive player of all time, right? Big part of championships. But, like, Ori's a great example now. Hit a lot of big shots and all that. But, yeah, if we're just going to talk about rings, that's where I think people would make the tiebreaker with Brady. Longevity. Look, there's nothing you can say to criticize him. He's great. I mean, you know, he did the deflate thing and lied about it and threw his cell phone away. And that's
whatever. They were up by 50 in that game.
No, it doesn't matter in the context of the game. It's one of those things where, you know, you'd rather not someone break the rules.
Yes, you
but,
would.
But regardless, Tom Brady is as good as it gets. I have said, though, and I swear I'm not pandering to Tennessee fans here, the greatest quarterback I've seen play is Peyton Manning when he was at his best. I think he was better than Tom Brady. So call me crazy. I mean,
that's not crazy. I mean, Peyton Manning, look, it's hard to argue. He's definitely on the short list when it comes to greatest quarterbacks of all time.
This like, just baseline like he's the GOAT, you know?
I would still give it to Brady, but it's not like it's one of those things that's just you can't pick anybody else, I don't think. Like, some people still consider Joe Montana the greatest quarterback.
Exactly. It's exactly. And it's gotten to the point where it's just like, oh, period, the GOAT, period, that's it. I'm like, he's definitely one of them.
Yeah.
He's certainly one of them.
And people do that with Michael Jordan,
short
too.
List.
Like, yeah. That's why I hate the narrative, because, for one, it's a team sport. Like, and I know people say, well, you're still the greatest player. You kind of outweigh those things. Well, if you look at LeBron's first NBA Finals against the San Antonio Spurs, can you name one player on that Cavs team?
What? Ilgauskas, Varejao
flopping around with that sideshow bob hair.
Damon Jones.
To your point, they were awful.
Yes, I think Allen Iverson, to me, in my opinion, is one of the top five best guards in the NBA, at least of my generation. Yeah, he didn't win a ring, but when he went to the NBA Finals, do you see what's on his team? Eric Snow? Like, come on. Like,
oh, don't mess with my guy Eric Snow.
But it's just like, it's a team sport still. It's that one individual kind of outweighs everything else. But at the end of the day, if you don't have a power forward, if you don't have a wide receiver, if you don't have people on defense that are playing in these various sports, then you're not going to win. So it's always a weird narrative to pinpoint you have to have this amount of rings to be great, when it's like, yeah, but look what I had to work with my entire career.
Charles Barkley is one of the best. It's hard to put a number on it, but I would put him in the best dozen basketball players I've ever seen play the game. I mean, he was MVP in 93. That Suns team should have beat Jordan and the Bulls. They didn't. He doesn't have a ring. I don't care. I mean, of course, that's a, you know, those guys still rip on him. Shaq rips on him in studio.
It's hilarious.
Where's your ring, Chuck? And that's fine. But to me, it doesn't diminish what he was as a player. Another guy I would put up there, among the greatest quarterbacks I've ever seen, and there's some numbers to back it up too, is Dan Fouts of the San Diego Chargers. No one ever talks about him in these discussions. You know, John Elway is a great example of, I think he changed the narrative on his career because he won those two titles at the end. Wouldn't it, if he didn't do that, watch
still
him play.
He's
one of the greatest quarterbacks ever. You know, so like, Brady, the longevity has been, and to be able to do it with different groups. And I know you can also look at, like, who was he throwing to? He had that one, you know, he had the Randy Moss, but for the most part, not great guys, not compared to some of these other quarterbacks we're talking about, like Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning had Marvin Harrison,
Reggie
and those
Wayne.
Guys. And he had, you know, he had Edgerrin James in the back.
Demaryius Thomas.
But I still don't, I reject the idea that it is just period black and white. He's the greatest. He's one of the greatest. Can we just agree on that?
Yes.
Yes,
I mean, the rings
yes,
count for something, though, right? I mean,
they count. Yeah, I'm not saying they don't count, but like, if it's just like, well, six here and four here, so again, like you said, Joe Montana, he won a bunch of rings, pretty darn good. I think Steve Young was better than Joe Montana. There's a hot take for you.
I think Steve Young was better than Joe Montana. That argument.
I
like that, Joe.
Hey, I mean, you got to throw it out there. Like, I think, hey, you want to talk about, you know, my old neck of the woods and someone who won't get much credit at all, but he plays in a crap organization. And you say, right, Matthew Stafford is an unbelievable
talent.
Oh,
man, I thought you were about to say Dan Orlovsky. I really did.
Yeah, Dan Orlovsky could not quite lift the Lions out of what they are. Matthew Stafford has, you know, gotten them to multiple playoff appearances and It's just, it's a terrible organization. Like, you are doomed in that organization. And he has done what he's done. He's the greatest quarterback they've ever had. He won't get any kind of, you know, recognition for that because he played for a bad organization. There's guys like that, too, who perform and they have all the talent in the world and they're just in bad situations. And Brady is a beneficiary. I think he and Belichick are, you know, are beneficiaries of each other, but it's not all Brady.
I would agree with that. I just think, you know, Tom Brady also has the numbers along with it. And, you know, you're talking about Brady, Manning, Breeze, Favre, Rodgers, probably one day Mahomes. Like, at the end of the day, is there going to be much that separates those guys? Probably not. But to me, that's when the rings come in, and that's when they count.
Yeah. Look, six rings over that duration, you can't argue with it. I still reject that it just, like, it's to Marquise's point, there's a lot that goes into it. Is a team sport. Cliche, but true.
When we come back, Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports will join us. We'll get into a little bit of the Brady / Tannehill discussion with him. That's coming up next. This is Morning Drive, live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money